surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Bud Podcast. Not outclassed. Wanders en masse.
Get it on Munster and run up to the end of the game.
The Bud Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Bud Podcast. My name's Mark Isles and I'm the chief football writer of the Bolton News. This is the show with a budget tighter than Steve Evans' skinny jeans and a script looser than Dai Young's morals. But we're still on air, so let's get on with it. On the Buff this week, a bunch of cobblers. Let's give Northampton Town a round of applause. Glove at first sight, we discuss exactly what is happening with Nathan Baxter and Dion Charles. Lost and Fund, we talk Wanderers ownership and some hard cash. And special guests Neil Metcalf and James Earnshaw join us for a chat about Stevenage and Reading. What's not to like?
Not many Reading fans made the journey up from Berkshire. Today, as Patterson swings another one across. Billy skirts up and it's there. The goal is at Seagraves. Yes, that's great goal by Seagraves. Terrific corner there from Mark Patterson, headed on by Phyllis Kirk. And Seagraves on hand after 7 minutes. Andy Walker's moving away. Phyllis Kirk, it is his look for. Phyllis Kirk puts it across. It's picked out. Here's Julian Darby. Here's Andy Walker. Andy Walker shoots and it's a goal! Oh, what a terrific goal! 16 yards out, and Andy Walker, after 26 minutes of the second half, scores the second goal. As he scores the second goal, the rain's come down, but who's worried about that? Terrific. Good old Andy. The Burnham Paddock send up the chant. There's only one Andy Walker.
Right, now it is time to introduce the man who often chips in with an opinion just so I can grab a mouthful of my brew. It's Henry Hewitt. Henry, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'll give you 20 seconds, Mark. It's great to be here. Happy Easter to everyone. If you are listening to this on the way to Stevenage, good luck. And that's just being in the same place as Steve Evans. have fun. And it's Monday as well. Reading, it's a bumper crowd. It should be exciting. There you go. That was about 20 seconds.
I got two sips in, but my tea suddenly tastes a bit weird now you've mentioned Steve Evans, to be truthful.
Oh.
I don't mind Steve Evans. I will say it right here, right now, for all the listeners listening. I don't mind him that much. And actually, from what people tell me, and you'll listen later on, I talk about Steve Evans to Neil, who deals with him quite a bit, obviously for the comic down there. And you know, actually, really good for local journalists. Really, quite an amenable guy. Once you get him away from the match day, you know, I think he just gets in a bad mood. And we've all been in bad moods, haven't we, Henry?
Oh, we have. You should have listened to... If anyone hadn't listened to the podcast after the Wigan game, I was in a bad mood. But no, former Wanderer, of course, Steve Evans. So to be fair, he is very complimentary to Bolton. But I do think there's part of that is him going, oh, look how big this club is. Look how magnificent they are. And we're little old Stevenage. And oh, we shouldn't really be here, but we are, kind of thing. It's all mind games.
I think... If you're Stevenage, I think that's just got to be your game plan, full stop. I think if you don't play on that in League One, then there's something wrong. But do you know what? Another little club did us a favour this week. Little old Cobblers. God bless the Cobblers. I don't know about you, but I'm starting to really like that place.
My attitude's changed from after we played them. Obviously, similar situation. We went a goal down in the first half, but managed to get an equaliser. It's cruel, Mark. I'll be honest with you, it's cruel. I probably would have rather Derby won 6-0 and us gone, right, it's playoffs it is, let's plan for that. Now, after last week being doom and gloom, now we're like, well, you know, if we beat Stevenage and if... you know, Derby have now, I think they've got, well, the lad got sent off. They've got another centre half who's out for the season. Mendes Lang is out for the season. So if they lose against Blackpool, we beat Stevenage. And then we beat Reading and they don't play until Tuesday or Monday night, I think, against Portsmouth. So maybe we could be second by the time we next do a podcast. And it's like, oh, don't, Henry, don't. I No, we had the christening to my son on Saturday, and I got to the church. It was quite late, actually. It was like 4 o'clock, and I sat down, and my dad tapped me on the shoulder and went, "Northampton have scored." And I was like, I was ignoring it because I don't want to. I just imagine Derby winning 3-0 and me just ignoring it. But no, fair play to Northampton.
How is little Hoskins Hewitt, by the way?
Yeah, I just got that in before the... is it legal when the vicar says his name is Hoskins?
Does anybody have any lawful impediment why this naming shouldn't happen? And Henry's like, me! He's called Hoskins! He's called Hoskins! Yeah. I mean, it was a funny old day. It was a funny old day, just kind of sat there. There wasn't really much happening at all in the footballing world. And I kept on kind of glancing at it and thinking, they're going to score. It's going to be one of those late things. And then there was 10 minutes of added time, and a few people around me were like, "Oh, have you seen the score? They're going to do it. And I didn't let myself hope at all. But like you say, it's always the hope that kills you. And that's where we're at the minute. I mean, they've got to go to Stevenage. They've got to go and do a job. Derby at home to Blackpool, which is not a gimme, and Blackpool are not quite as good away from home as they are at home. I'd have been much more confident if that was at Bloomfield Road, but hey-ho. There's no gimmies now. I think everybody, it's the old squeaky bum time. Everybody, form goes out the window and all the old footballing cliches, but it does feel like Bolton have been left off the hook a bit, or let off the hook.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, I think this is realistically Bolton's final chance for me. If they let this slip, then, it's destined to be the playoffs. So, I mean, we've got to remember that Peterborough and Barnsley are also in a good position. So,
Minutes, 57 seconds, just in case anybody was wondering when Henry was going to slip Peterborough into the conversation. That's going to be the new golden goal. It's Henry's first mention of his beloved Peterborough.
Beloved Peterborough. This year there's no way. On that last game, there's no way I'm messaging Darren going, "Can I get in the director's box, please?" Even though as nice as it would be if we got promoted, there is no way I'm doing that.
No.
But they are still in there. And Barnsley, of course, that's where the christening was on Saturday, Barnsley. But speaking to their fans, they're still like going, "Yeah, we're rubbish. I don't know why we're fourth." my wife's uncle, who is 54, said, "I could score against our defence, and Bolton should have won 6-2 the other week." So that's where their heads are at.
Yeah, Dower Yorkshiremen are a different breed. Yeah. But look, honestly, I do think there'll be more twists and turns. I don't think it's necessarily going to be, win or bust against Stevenage. It feels that way for definite. But God, it's just a weird, division. Nobody seems to want to really grasp it, with the exception of Pompey. You've got to give Pompey a bit of credit because they've ground it out, and I still don't think they're an especially spectacular team, but their consistency has been there. And if they go up, they, more than deserved it for what they've done so far, but they can still slip. We can still catch them. I'm positive of it. The thing is, there's been a lot of talk about this international break, what it can bring to Bolton, all the benefits, all the time on the training ground, the rest, the recuperation, the players that can come back. Now is the time to walk the walk.
Yes, it is. This is, like I said, last chance, I think, for Bolton. And it's funny, really, again, we'll talk about this in a moment in more detail, but, we're now in a position where we're like, oh, we're getting our players back. Yeah, I've just mentioned before, Derby seems to be losing them. So it's their heads are in a place where we were a month ago. So it's really interesting.
Sounds a bit like a headline. Shall we crack on?
News. Let's start where I've just teased. Dion and Nathan Baxter. Dion has spent the last week in Northern Ireland / Scotland. Surely he's back now. I know he didn't play for him, but surely he's back. And Nathan Baxter, any update on that?
Well, I mean, as we sit here right now, I am waiting to go into a press conference. So I suppose the official okay thumbs up will come. And I may make a late edit to this in case there's been something that's completely caught me off guard, but... journalist slash podcaster. So yes, this is the edit that I promised you, and this is me talking the following day after the press conference, after I've ripped up pretty much everything that me and Henry discussed for the next 10 or so minutes. Apologies, Henry, your chunk is on the cutting room floor. As many of you will know, Ian Evatt very pointedly, in fact, came out and said that neither Nathan Baxter or Dion Charles would be available for Stevenage. He did stop short of saying anything about Reading, I might add. But, I mean, that is obviously... And the way that he said it, both on the official club channels and, of course, to us reporters as well. Bottom line, he looked a bit miffed. And, I mean, obviously, if he was expecting them back, I suppose he's got every right to be as well. So, the big question is, of course... where do we stand with it? We'll tackle Dion first. So Dion Charles went away with Northern Ireland, we know that. And we also saw footage of him doing some training. He was never involved in either of the squads, it must be said. So I read that as being a case of they wanted him in the group. Obviously it's a formative group, there's a lot of young players there, they wanted to keep people around. His knee, obviously Bolton weren't particularly happy that he went away on international duty in the first place. I think that's fair to say. But he wanted to go away. Northern Ireland wanted to have a look at him to see whether or not he was fit enough to play. All that, I suppose, is just the life of a manager in international football. It's been a while since we've had a club v country row. But the golden thing for me, really, is whether or not he has done himself some damage whilst he's over there, and now he's hampered his chances of coming back. That's the big one. Now, a few people have read Ian Evatt's words. He basically just said, this is all I'm saying about it, they're not playing. So, a lot of people have read that in many ways, but some people have thought that it's a bit of gamesmanship on Ian Evatt's behalf. Maybe both of them turn up on the team sheet at Reading... sorry, at Stevenage and then Reading, and all of a sudden, you know, it's a classic little bit of tomfoolery, a bit of mind games. And I'm all in for that, absolutely all in for that. Ian Evatt would deserve a good acting award. I'm not saying Oscar, but certainly, you know, Olivier, maybe, something like that, for his facial expressions on the day. He didn't really, in person... paint a manager who was trying to just get one over on Steve Evans. So, you know, it looks to me like there may have been a setback, whether or not that's the original injury, whether or not he's picked up something else whilst he's been travelling over there. You know, I'm not sure with Dion. I'm not sure with Dion. With Nathan Baxter. Now, this has been a little bit of a secretive kind of journey anyway, because of course he damaged his hand all the way back at Barnsley. No goalkeeper on the bench. I think we must address that. Was that an issue? Was that a mistake that he could have been brought off, maybe lessen the injury? I think that's a fair question to ask, to be honest. With Nathan Baxter, I know for a fact that he had it checked out by a couple of different people. He's obviously had the kind of club report and the club medical. He's also had it checked out independently. That is true. And that was actually true before the international break. I think a few people are trying to pass that off as new information. It's not. So he is obviously looking out for himself to a large degree. It's his career. Of course it is. Whether or not there is some conflict there between the club wanting him to get back and pushing him to get back, maybe, you know, more than he's comfortable with, I think that will probably come out in the wash. I think that will certainly, you would imagine, depending on the kind of the healing time, when he actually does come back and when we actually do start talking about this, I think that will come out in the wash. But as things stand, he is obviously either not medically able or, not personally willing to go back on there.
And that's not a slight on Nathan Baxter. That is, you know, sometimes you've just got to you've got to stand firm if you think it's going to be to your longer term benefit, I suppose. So, yeah, that's where I think it is at the minute. Obviously, difficult without a proper explanation from the club, who are kind of very much keeping themselves on it. They had done through the international break. They did say that he'd got the splint off, and that, you know, all things were looking good. I think Al Nixon put a story out as well that you know, the Baxter camp was looking good. So maybe we see him in goal. Maybe all this conspiracy and kind of second guessing is for absolutely nothing. But who knows? Who knows? Like I say, I think Ian Everett will deserve an acting award for his press conference if those two players end up on the team sheet at the Lamex Stadium. Unfortunately, I really can't tell you anything better than that. I would love to sit here and give you the inside scoop on your way down to Stevenage, but the truth is, at the moment, everybody at Bolton is keeping that very, very close to the chest. So we're just going to have to ride out and see where it goes. Has there been fallouts? All that kind of stuff will come out in the wash, I assure you. So, okay, keep your fingers crossed, and we will now return to, I wouldn't say our regular programming, because I'll stop right there just for a second, because we were also talking about the funding and BMLL group, lots of different stuff has been planned for this podcast, and then just as I am recording the final little touches, just to put this thing out on air, I get a WhatsApp message to say the accounts are being released this afternoon. So I've got some maths to do, and potentially some more editing to do. FML. For those who know what I mean. Cheers. Let's have another headline.
So you had a chat with Neil Hart. We did a little bit on it last week. Mm-hmm. And now there's some more stuff come from your chat. He said that if Bolton get up to the Championship, or whether we stay in League One, I guess, that they'd still need significant owner funding to operate. I mean, this is the world of football now, I guess. Mm. What's your thoughts on this? Is this just Bolton in the real world, or
It's that sustainability thing. I think one of the words that has popped up so often since Football Ventures have been in, and this kind of like move towards sustainability, it's even bled through to Ian Everett. Now, sustainability is practically impossible outside the Premier League, because to keep a competitive budget going, you've got to put your hand in your pocket a fair amount. And there's not that much TV revenue that plugs that gap. You can do it. It's not impossible. But you tend to find the examples are the kind of the Accrington Stanleys of this world. And I think even Andy Holtz had to plug a funding gap in that place, you know, the last few years at least. So clubs operating at a break even, the only ones that do tend to be the ones that have sold big money players. And of course, doing that maybe sacrifices a bit of your ambition. And I think speaking to Neil Hart, the good thing is that, you know, the funding plan is there. Certainly they've got a 2-year plan that's fully funded. And it kind of branches off a little this year. It's if they go up or if they stay in League One. But it's there. It's recognised. It's in stone. They know what they're doing. So that's a real positive. And it's nothing abnormal, I don't think, the fact that Football Ventures or whoever is going to have to invest more money. I think the last accounts, if I'm right, were 3.7 across the group they'd lost. It may have been something like 5-ish for the football side on its own. I think that'll go up again this year. I think it'll be a bigger loss, even though they've made more money commercially. And I think that's one of the concessions that Neil Hart said. He said, you know, the commercial side of the club has done so well, but it still costs a lot of money to run. And it certainly costs a lot of money to run that stadium outside the Premier League. So, yeah, I think when the accounts come out, we think it's going to be roughly the end of the month. I think there's going to be a little bit of, cheeks blown out at how much money has actually gone into it, to be honest. And, you know, long may it continue in a sense, because, you know, they are trying to do things the right way. But I think until this funding deal gets done by the EFL, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of clubs are relying on that, and we discussed it last week. I think personally, it needs to be used to make clubs, you know, sustainable rather than being used to just get increased transfer fees and wage budgets. You know, you'd like to think Bolton are quite savvy, I guess. You know, and wouldn't just waste the money on buying a striker from Denmark for $5 million.
Be a very weird thing to do, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hey, buying players from Denmark worked in the 90s, so you never know. I think it's just modern day football, I guess. And like I said, and it's there's so many clubs now that are, you've got to find the balance between being sustainable and trying to give it a go and get to the Premier League of this promised land with all this money. And, you know, the problem Bolton, I think, have had, even though when we were in the Premier League, we weren't, well, the latter time, stage of the Premier League especially, we weren't being run very well. But the problem Bolton have got is that we got relegated at the wrong time. You know, we got relegated and then suddenly all the money increases. Whether we'd gone up in that first season, whether it would have been different, I'm not too sure. But, you know, now you get to a point where even more than ever before, really, that clubs are just coming back up when they go down. So even for Bolton, if we get promoted, let's say, for example, I don't know, Sheffield United or Burnley, they're going to have a wage budget far bigger than Bolton's because they've just been in the Premier League. So you're having to compete with that.
Absolutely. Should we have another headline?
So next on the agenda in the headlines, I guess it follows on from the previous one, actually. And it's been confirmed that in the medium to long term, Football Ventures will have the support of the BMLL group.
One more L.
I think they're the Swiss guys. So, I mean, well, what does this mean?
What does it mean? What does it mean? I think since day one, and they became involved with Bolton Wanderers as the Swiss consortium, there's been a bit of an air of mystery about these guys. And some fair questions being asked by the fans about how long are they going to be committed for? What are they there for? What's the motivation? What do they want back? You know, how much is going in? All that kind of stuff. So we put some of that to Neil Hart. And I think what he said kind of, it was encouraging. It feels like they're there for the right reasons. They are invested in the journey, to use his phrase. They want to see Bolton back into the Premier League. And as I said before, that's where the money is. That's where anybody's going to get a return. So really, I think if you're invested in a club at League One level and you think you're going to get a profit, or even, I mean, especially at Championship level, but if you're going to take a club from League One to the Championship and expect a profit, then you need your head testing. I've got a couple of ex-Bolton owners or wannabe owners that you might want to talk to. And you can all club together in a special loony bin. But yeah, it's a mad world, football finance, isn't it? And especially outside that Premier League. But from the looks of things, they're happy to let the football decisions be made by, you know, Neil Hart and Nick Lewcock and Sharon Britton and obviously Ian Evatt. They're happy for the club to be guided in what they always term a kind of ambitious but pragmatic way. And they are there, as you mentioned there, for the medium to long term. So I'm guessing that's the next step and beyond. I'm guessing that what they would want to be doing is getting a return on their investment once they get into the Premier League. And what that looks like, I suppose, we will only know when we make that step. But at the moment, we don't particularly know that much about them, other than the odd couple that have been quoted here and there. But there are 25 families who are all happy to keep on funding the club.
You know, I mean, it's good. It's obviously good that they're there for the medium to long term. Obviously, there will be a time where they want a profit on their investment or sell up or do things slightly differently. But I guess for Bolton at the moment in League One, you know, like Sharon's been great, but could we sustain the Championship with just Sharon's investment? Probably not. So to have the club being backed this way, and also, like we said the other week, they've made it clear that they don't want to interfere. They trust what was being done, so that's a good thing as well. So hopefully it can be great for us and we can push on. Right, moving to the next headline, and it's about season tickets. And you had a chat with Neil Hart. He said that Bolton had sold over 7,000 and then released a few days later that it was over 8,500.
Hey, the article worked.
Yes, it did. Very good. Yeah, there seems to be a question mark over quite a few people. Because, I mean, if we got, I think it's 17,000 this year, is it? 16,000?
Sure, yeah. After the half season ticket, yeah.
Yeah, so there's 10,000 there that haven't renewed yet. A lot has been said about people are wondering which league will be in next year. Do you think there's an element to that? Or is it just, I guess, people just haven't got around to it yet?
I mean, the feedback I've had, and I was quite surprised at just how many people came back to me and said, oh, yeah, well, I haven't done it yet, but I am doing. You know, it could be just as simple as just pay and you kind of you save up and that's the way it works. You know, I don't think there has been an especially negative view on anything. And, you know, the prices went up a little bit, but I don't think there was an especially strong backlash against that. We know that the TV deal is going to have some effect on Saturday 3 p.m. kickoffs, and there are a few people that suggest that might have something to do with it, but I don't think, again, it's been a big groundswell of opinion. And again, I'd be surprised if there's a lot of people that are sat there saying, well, listen, I'm going to pay this as a championship team but not as a League One club. Because if you're playing at the top end of League One, it's just as enjoyable as being a championship club looking to sustain itself. I don't think there's going to be too many snobby fans like that. There may be some who, you know, maybe aren't enjoying the ride, don't enjoy the football. And obviously, as a, you know, it's entirely up to people whether they spend their money or not. Of course it is. But I think from kind of knowing Bolton fans, they're a loyal lot, and I can imagine that figures won't really be affected that much in the end.
No, I can't imagine so either, and I think it's you know, a lot of people, it's kind of a status symbol saying, oh, I'm a season ticket holder.
Yeah.
And you know, I think people won't want to give that up. That's why you get people who've been season ticket holders for 30-40 years. Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we've seen the fact that you spoke to Neil Hart and it was over 7,000, then Monday or Tuesday it was 8,500, tells you that people have probably got round to it. It could be, you know, around payday, which is, well, now. So yeah, maybe those figures will jump up again. Maybe there are some people who are, you know, like thinking, oh, we need to see what league they're in, or some people that have doing it off the back of a couple of defeats lately and going, well, I don't want to watch that, and then we'll get 6 points at the weekend, and suddenly they'll jump up because they'll decide to do it. So yeah, it's I'm like you. I don't doubt that no matter what league we're in, because let's face it, if we're in League One, we're probably going to win more than what we lose anyway, so yeah, that'll be entertaining. And if you're in the Championship, you're playing against better teams, so that'll be entertaining. So I'm sure it'll be around the same figure.
There is a ceiling as well, as of course, you know, there's only so many people that are going to come in League One. And I would suggest they're probably at that ceiling. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? Sorry, yeah, the postman appears to have just thrown a boulder through my door. I don't know what the hell's happened there. Good grief.
It's anyway, your season ticket, Mark.
It must be, yeah. Right, give me another headline then.
So this is probably the last thing we're going to say. Hopefully the last thing we're going to say. Well, maybe until the review of the season about the Wigan defeat a few weeks ago. Fines have been sent out for the fracas after the game. £11,500 of fines, which the majority went to Wigan.
Yeah, because apparently they've done it before. So, okay, that's fine. It's hit them in the pocket to the tune of £9,500. And Bolton to the tune of 2,500. I mean, it was nothing really. I've got to be honest. I know the FA have got to be seen to stopping this sort of stuff, but it was barely a brouhaha, in my opinion. It was hardly even a fracas. There was a little bit of pushing and shoving, but let's be honest. I've seen a lot worse at the rugby. A lot worse, and nobody seems to get fined there. So I think it's just the FA topping up their topping up their Christmas budget, I think, probably Christmas party budget, but it was nothing, was it? I mean, I've definitely seen worse that has never got anywhere near a disciplinary, personally.
Yeah, no, it was just, as we said at the time, you know, Wigan had won, they were on the wind-up, Bolton were obviously lost, and they were very frustrated. So I think it was, it was just that. Talking about
wind-up, Sam Tickle played in goal at the under-21 game the other night. And apparently they were booing him. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's just, I think because it was Luxembourg, and obviously England won 7-0, didn't they? So I think it's just fans on the, they just having a laugh, really, because he's not got much to do. you know, if it was a close game against, I don't know, Brazil or whoever, then I think the fans may not do that. But against Luxembourg, I'm sure just a bit of fun. He could have been giving it back.
I have no idea. I wasn't at the game. Dan Barnes wanted to do the game, so I left Dan Barnes to do it. I woke up this morning and I've got loads of angry emails from people in Wigan asking why I've not taken Bolton Wanderers to task over their unruly supporters. But hey, you know, okay. Pantomime, that's all it is. Yeah. Let's move on.
Right, well, this is an interesting one that came out, another thing out of your chat with Neil Hart, and it's about the women's team. We said last week that Bolton had announced on International Women's Day that the women's team is going to fall under the same umbrella as the men's team for the first time in quite a few years. And they've set themselves a bit of a target. It looks like they're really going for it.
Absolutely. And the target being, in 5 years, they are expected to go from Tier 6 where they are now in like a northwest regional division, up into the third tier, which is just on the cusp of the WSL, and a level where some pretty big clubs, you know, kind of Nottingham Forests and Newcastle Uniteds and that kind of quality of club are playing at the moment. So there's a fair amount of money that needs to go into that. It's a bigger investment I thought it was going to be. I've got to be honest. When they said it, and they said they were going to bring it in-house, it is only semi-professional, so we're not talking, it's not even the same universe as what they'd be paying for the men's team, obviously, because it's a semi-professional side as things stand. In the future, who knows? I certainly hope they move towards that. But they are definitely commercially, and, you know, logistically, making sure they do it properly. And I think that's brilliant. And I'm hoping that if they do it right, they can start to establish a fan base and start to establish a little bit of kind of history and a little bit of kind of traction with people. Because I think there was a little spell, and I'm trying to think exactly when. I think we're talking about 2016-17, where the women's team was still in-house, being run by the Community Trust, but they'd done quite well. They got a couple of promotions, and there were a few players who started kind of like catching the eye, scoring goals and such like, maybe getting decent moves, and the women's team became, had some prominence, and it was so enjoyable to be able to talk and to be able to cover that team. And then it all kind of faded away, and obviously there was a split, and there was a lot of very, very complicated stuff that went on eventually, but it goes to show that I think there is a market there at Bolton. I think, you know, there's bound to be young girls, young women around the town who want to play for a town team. It's that aspirational quality. It's got to be there. And, I really hope that they do it justice.
Yeah. And as I said last week or whenever it was, if for me personally, you know, I love watching the England women's team and major tournaments, and they did very well. But I think at league level, I don't really have a team to support, because obviously, the teams in the WSL are the likes of Man United and Liverpool's and Arsenal's and Chelsea's. So I think if Bolton can really get behind this and then get the club as a whole and the fan base behind it, it'll be fantastic, and fantastic for the town as well. And hopefully a rise in the men's team can be mirrored with a rise in the women's team.
Absolutely. Let's have another headline.
And finally, James Trafford. We would have loved to have seen him. I think he would have got a very different reaction to what Sam Tickle got in the under-21 game. But unfortunately, he wasn't there. But fortunately for him, that was because he was in the squad for the first team, the
Belgian game,
international.
Yeah.
So it was great to see. And Conor Bradley as well scored against Scotland. So, Bolton fans look on as like proud uncles when those two are doing well. And it continued this week.
They do. And you know, Traff said in his first interview with me, which was on a Zoom call, it was in the time where we weren't even doing face-to-face interviews. Most of them were being done by Zoom. He was at the training ground, and he said, I'm going to be Manchester City in England number one. And we're kind of like, oh, really? Okay. You know, we've just kind of been bombed out by Accrington, mate, and you come in here to a League One club in Bolton that are struggling a bit, to be truthful. It was a bit fanciful, I thought, that talk. But hey, he's produced the goods. He's one step away now. He was on the bench against Belgium. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm so chuffed for him. And, you know, he's put so much hard work to get to the point he has. And he'll be the first to say there's lots of big coaches that have worked hard with him as well. Jilks deserves a massive pat on the back for the work he did. He's helped get him there as well. So, yeah, really brilliant. Conor, exactly the same. You know, you read the Irish papers, Belfast Telegraphs and such like, and they cannot get enough of him. It's crazy. He's like an absolute superstar. I read that the last Northern Irishman to score against Scotland in Scotland was George Best. Wow. So he's in decent company there, let's be honest. Not bad at all. And also, it'd be remiss of me not to say, commiserations to Wales and to Josh Sheard as well, because they lost on the penalty shootout against Poland, which was a real shame. Absolutely battered them. I thought they were the better team easily over 120 minutes. And it was very cruel. It was a very, very cruel way of going out. And it's going to be a poorer tournament not to have the Welsh in it, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, they fall in the same bracket as the other home international teams. Yeah. Scotland are there. Obviously, they'll bring a lot in terms of a fan base and an atmosphere, and Ireland would, and Northern Ireland would. So, yeah, it's a shame for Wales. Shame after the World Cup as well. I think they needed to be back in the Euros and put that right. But, no, I mean, there's 612 teams in the next World Cup, so I'm sure they'll get another chance in a couple of years.
Is that Philip Moraes? Emails, actually.
More shout-outs than emails this week, if I'm honest. More shout-outs. Mark Hampson has written in to ask if we can give his son Nathan a big shout-out. He's turning 19 on the day of the Stevenage game, and he'll probably be listening to this on the way down there. Nathan, happy birthday, mate. Thank you very much for listening in. And secondly, Selena Walsh has also emailed in to ask for a shout out for her son, Daniel, who was probably listening to this podcast instead of revising for his driving test. Says to Daniel, make sure you know what the tread depth is. What tread depth, the legal tread depth. That's the one that tripped me up. Just the one email this week, and it's from South Africa. John has emailed in, international buff strikes again. He says, watch your Mark and Henry. You said you needed some praise in the first paragraph, so here goes. We download two podcasts on my phone every week, yours and the official Fantasy Football League podcast, and it's yours that I listen to first every single week. Where did fantasy football go, he says. Both of you were that bad that you've decided to chuck it in the unhappy shop, possibly. Should we resurrect it, Henry?
No.
God knows where I am now, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, same here. I think the thing with fantasy football for me that's ruined it is Haaland, because you have to have Haaland in your team. So it's just everyone has Haaland as captain, and then it's about who else you pick. So that's ruined it a little bit for me. But you know, I trudge on. I'll see where I get to at the end of the season.
They've got a new one as well, like a challenge where you have an unlimited budget every week, and there's like a set, like a rule every week, like strikers count double, or you know, clean sheets count double or whatever. But I've just done my first team. It's an unlimited budget. You can go nuts. You can have as many, you know, many star players as you like. But it's like week to week prizes. So I mean, I'll probably just be just as bad at that as I am at regular fantasy football league, but hey. Yes, well, Jonathan has continued his question. He says there's one that he's got for us both. Who is the best player you've ever seen playing against Bolton Wanderers? He said, when I lived back home, I went to Burnham Park, my dad sees play against Brescia in the Anglo-Italian Cup and saw Georgie Hargi, but I don't really remember him doing much. Now, I think he did play well, by all accounts, but there weren't too many people there. Cristiano Ronaldo, on the other hand, he says, well, I'd imagine you'd have to ask Nicky Hunt how well he played. Great work as ever, Jonathan. So what's your thoughts on that one? The best player ever against Bolton Wanderers?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you're looking at it. If you're looking at it in terms of a career, then you would have to probably say Cristiano Ronaldo. I guess, I don't know, others like Thierry Henry, I've seen as Bolton, Drogba, Lampard. Just players from that era of the Premier League, really. Vieira, Gerrard, Shearer, maybe. Ruud Gullit, I saw play Bolton at Burnham Park. Yeah, that was my first ever game, actually, watching Bolton was against Chelsea. So, I think you put them in. In terms, I was trying to think of, in terms of an individual performance, I mean, Fowler got a hat-trick against Bolton in the Premier League, so maybe I remember randomly, was it Britta Sombalonga when we played? We played Middlesbrough and got played off the park.
Yeah,
and I think he had a really good game. So I mean, I'm not putting Britta Sombalonga in the same bracket as Ronaldo, Thierry Henry, and Shearer. But I mean, can you think of any?
I think Rooney always seemed to have a stonker against Bolton, particularly in the latter Premier League years. But do you know what? I'm going to throw a Sombalonga in there. Lloyd Dyer for Leicester or Burton or whenever he played against Bolton. Except for when he came to Bolton. Lloyd Dyer was like Cristiano Ronaldo squared whenever he came up against Bolton in the Championship. But for some reason, when he came to Bolton, he was one of the worst. He was definitely one of the worst players that I can think of.
Yeah, I think we just hope that period of all of our lives watching Bolton could be wiped out of our memories, like Men in Black. I think Jonathan, this is one we're going to have to put out to the listeners as well.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. I think, yeah, okay then. Here's a question. What is the best player? What is the best individual performance you've ever seen against a Bolton team? And we'll see whether or not we can put together a first 11. Maybe that's something we can have for the summer. You know the email address by now, but just in case you don't, here it is. So you want to bring something up on the Buff? Email Mark and Henry on thebuffmail@gmail.com. That's thebuffmail, all one word, @gmail.com. And sorry to the male escort who probably getting some unsolicited Bolton Wanderers correspondence from the people who spell that incorrectly. Okay, time for some predictions.
Pass us me crystal ball. What's happening next week?
Prediction time.
Stevenage first up on Good Friday. Now, we're going to speak to Neil Metcalf from The Comet down at Stevenage in just a moment. I spoke to him yesterday about Steve Esmond's team, and it's been a pretty good season for them so far. I mean, you would never have picked out. I can't remember exactly where I put him on our pre-season predictions. I'm sure it was nowhere near seventh. It would have been pretty near the bottom, I'm pretty sure. But they've done remarkably well, haven't they?
Yeah. And you know, even when they came to the tough sheet, it was a tough game. You know, we only just got past them. So, yeah, they've. I mean, you might get a team that's been promoted, have a bit of momentum and kick on and have a good start and then they tail off. And I suppose Stevenage have to an extent, but to still be seventh. And this is it, is that suddenly this game is it's a real tough game because Bolton, we're doing a lot better in the last few years at these tight, smaller grounds than we did in the previous few years. But, you know what we're getting from Steve Evans' teams. We know what we're getting from certain players of theirs. So, it's going to be tough. I think the lads have had a couple of weeks to get ready for it, and I think they really need to be up for it, because you know, if you have a slow start against these and they go a couple of goals up, they'll make it really difficult.
I think this is basically the most awkward away game that you're going to get, and it's probably, I mean, probably, definitely not the sort of game that I'm sure Ian Everett would have liked to have straight after an international break, because it will take Bolton as far out their comfort zone as it's possible for them to go, I think. But if they can get 3 points, as we said at the top of the show, then it's game on. I feel like it can be that kind of game. There's so much riding on it in terms of confidence. I still think there'll be twists and turns, but I think if they can get a win there, it will be absolutely worth its weight in gold. You know, especially if it came hand in hand with Derby dropping some points. But, you know, we can't have everything. I think as long as they go there and get their business done, it won't matter too much for this weekend. But do I think they'll do it? I don't think it'll be easy. I do think Stevenage will score. I think they're going to win 2-1. I've got a funny feeling that Ricardo Santos is going to be the match winner for Bolton. How about that?
Oh yeah, which could mean a goal, or it could mean a last-ditch tackle or
could
something.
Could do. It's going to be that vague. Yeah. I like one of those guys that writes horoscopes.
I'm going to go with a 1-0. We've seen this before with Bolton. Ironically, as we record this on Wednesday the 27th, Burnden Ace has just said it's, 3 or 4 years since we beat Forest Green 1-0 when there were no fans in the ground. And yep. I think it could be a similar sort of game to that, where they get a goal in the first half and then, I don't know whether about hanging on, but they do enough to get over the line. And I think this is such a big game for Bolton, because if we win, take out the Derby result, the Peter result and the Barnes result, if Bolton win, it will be a massive shot in the arm, and I think it will give a lot of people confidence going into the latter stages of the season. Obviously, one or two results could go our way as well, which would be great. But going into that Reading game on the back of a win will be massive. So I think it is it's a huge game.
Well, somebody who knows all about Stevenage is Neil Metcalf, who writes one of my sister papers down there. The Comet, top man, does not sound like he's from Stevenage. I'll warn you now, he sounds a little bit like the guy that works in the garage in Alan Partridge. he's a top man. He knows his stuff. Here's what he had to say. Well, what we want to know is, you know, what's the mood like at the minute, really? I suppose, is it going to be a good Friday for Bolton Wanderers? Because results would seem to have dipped a little bit.
It's very, very strange, because, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, earlier this month, played away at Lincoln and got a very good 0-0 draw there. And at that point, it was comfortably in Stevenage's hands. There were sixths with a game in hand, a couple of points ahead, and it all looked good. And it's just got a little bit cooey, to be honest, in the last sort of few weeks. It looked like it was going to be horrible on Saturday when they were 2-0 down to Carlisle up in Cumbria. But rescued that with basically the last kick of the game, and I'm just hoping that's the catalyst that says, right, we're going to have to scrap for this now. We are really going to have to work hard. It's not in our hands anymore, but if we battle hard, we can actually get something out of it. So I'm hoping the mood's good. It was certainly buoyant after the game, but it will be when you score in the last minute, so it always is. So we'll see how we go on Friday.
I mean, everybody takes notice of what Steve Evans says, because invariably it's quite quotable. But in the last few weeks, maybe months even, he seems to have really had a bit of a bee in his bonnet about refereeing decisions and maybe a bit of bad luck going against him. Is that fair to say? Is that correct?
To be honest, yes. I mean, I'm not a Stevenage fan. My only skin in the game is the fact I cover them. Mm. So I do have a like sort of vested interest, if you like, but you know, I can sort of detach myself from some of the big decisions and look at it sort of from a neutral perspective. And I've got to be honest, Steve's actually been fairly right. There's a couple of them I've disagreed with, and a couple of them you can argue and say, well, fair enough, I missed that one as well, so it's hard to say the referee should have seen it if I have missed it as well. But yeah, there has been some big decisions, but ultimately on top of that, Stevenage haven't played as well as they were earlier on in the season. So, you know, you can take it one or two ways. The decisions going against them may have had an impact, but ultimately they haven't been scoring enough goals. Jamie Reid's goals had dried up until Friday when he scored for Northern Ireland on his debut, and no one else was chipping in with the goals. So Steve was down after that game, and I could understand it. It was a poor performance, but the disallowed goal against Leighton Orient was horrible. It was never a handball. Yeah. Even watching it first off, you're like, well, that's never hit his hand. It must be offside he's given it for. But, you know, so I can completely empathise with Steve. But like I say, hopefully that Carlisle result's just given them a little kick up the bum and filled them with a bit of confidence, and we'll see where we are.
I think you look at the results over the course of the season, and it's very, very rare to see Stevenage get beat by more than a single goal. It's just been maybe just that little extra edge needed in the big games, potentially?
It is. And to be honest, this is why Steve Evans says that, listen, if we get into the playoffs, we'll win it. Because Stevenage are not losing by, you know, hatfuls when they play the big boys. You know, that game earlier on in the season up at Bolton, I mean, it was an entertaining game for the neutral, but I thought there was... Stevenage defended poorly for the three goals. You know, Bolton took them well. It was a silly penalty to give away. The second was a completely unmarked at the back post. And then the third, there was a daft free kick given away in the lead-up. All avoidable. But that's the sort of thing that they had to learn earlier on in the season, that they couldn't get away with the stuff in League One like they used to in League Two. But it has only been the odd goal. Derby, the other week, won in the 90th minute at Pride Park for a 1-0 win. You know,
don't we know it?
It's, you know, it's games like that. Barnsley won 2-1 up there just before Christmas, but then again, they scored fairly late. If Stevenage, they're not beating many by two or three. It is only, if they're winning, they're only winning by a single goal. But that means that if you're going into the playoffs, you've got a chance over a two-legged thing. So Stevenage have just got to get there. They know that. They've got Oxford on the penultimate day, away at Oxford. But that could be crucial. But they've got to be still in the game by that point. And that means getting a result against the likes of Bolton and Barnsley and Charlton, who are the next sort of three games.
Looking at results, some good ones away from home. Some decent ones at home as well. But has it been a different team when you're playing at the Lamex Stadium?
Away from home has been fantastic this year. Home's actually been a bit disappointing, to be fair. There's been too many draws. And draws that they didn't need to. They could have went and won most of those games. Again, just daft mistakes. Away from home, they've been excellent. They've set up nicely. It wouldn't surprise us. It would surprise us because it's not in his DNA. But it wouldn't surprise us if he went a little bit more like an away side on Friday, just to try and contain Bolton and get the advantage that way. But they need to finish strong at home. It's the old saying, you win your home games and you pick up what you can away. So, you know, the need to finish strong at home. But, oh God, you know, you don't have to tell me, Bolton are flying against Sens second place. So Stevenage have just got to stay in the game. Stay in the game and hopefully come out with something at the end of it.
I mean, for Bolton, it feels like they've been given a bit of a second life because Derby lost at Northampton over the international break. It feels like a game they've got to win. Is it win or bust for Stevenage, looking at their position just behind Oxford now and looking to get into those playoffs?
To be honest, Saturday gone, I felt was a must-win game. But the way it went, the draw, you take it all day long. Bolton's a bit of a free hit. I mean, but you know, Bolton will come down, and even though it's at Stevenage, Bolton will be the favourites to take the 3 points. So Stevenage have got a bit of a free hit. That can, a draw wouldn't be the worst result in the world for Stevenage. Absolutely not. They can then, I mean, like I say, they've got a tough little run with Charlton away on Easter Monday. Then they've got Barnsley at home. So A draw wouldn't be the worst result. They do need to pick up wins shortly, but you'll take a draw all day long against Bolton.
Jamie Reid, 17 goals in the league, I think, this season. Is he still the man that makes you tick?
He is, but he hasn't scored in about 2 months until he scored for Northern Ireland, you know. It was like, he was on a real drought, and then he got called up, and we were all thinking, well, you know, we could understand if he got called up at the early part of the season, but not at the minute, because he's not in good form, but he took his goals so well against Romania on Friday night there. And you know, that could be a thing. He'll be back on Friday. If he has a decent game against Scotland tonight, who knows? You know, that could just suddenly have cured him, and he suddenly hits the high points again. And that's been the problem. Without Reid scoring, Stevenage have looked a little bit toothless. Mm. But if he scores, then with a decent defence, and like you say, not losing by more than the one goal, it could make the difference. So, you know, fingers crossed for Reedy and fingers crossed for Stevenage.
The strange thing is, if Dion Charles is completely fit, maybe Jamie Reid doesn't get his chance there for Northern Ireland and he doesn't play himself into form. So it's strange how football can work. I suppose, from a Stevenage point of view, you're hoping that Jamie Reid comes back and he's completely, you know, he's hitting the ground running again.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, I was talking to Steve Evans last week and I said to him, I says, you know, what happens if Reedy scores against Scotland tonight? And he says, well, he's playing with the kids, you know. He's not coming back in this building if he's done that. But no, he says a good result for me would be Scotland winning 4-3 with Reid getting a hat-trick. But Reedy, if he's got the goal sense, the way he took that goal was impressive. It was completely different to the way he's been snatching at chances for Stevenage recently. It was much more fluent. It looked much more like the Jamie Reid of earlier in the season. So, I mean, if you can get him firing again for the last seven games, Stevenage have got a chance of getting in those playoffs.
I certainly don't wish to see it, but are we going to see a Steve Evans fist bump? Is it a fist bump? Is it a jive? Is it a Charleston? I'm not really sure, to be honest.
Yeah, he went with a soft shoe shuffle the last time out. I was joking with him, saying, are you going on Strictly? And he said, I'm sure they would love to have us on. But
I think, honestly, I think I could see him going in the jungle. He'd make fascinating viewing in the jungle. I think that's his next career move after management, surely.
And he's an absolute godsend for me. I think, he's a pantomime villain.
Yeah.
You know, he's a perfect pantomime villain. But when you get him away from a Saturday afternoon and you have a chat with him on a Thursday, he's actually just a typical football fan. Mm. You know, he just loves his football, likes to talk about it. So he's a godsend for me, and long may he stay at Stevenage.
Well, mate, thank you very much for coming on to the Buff. Pleasure talking to you as ever. And I will see you on Good Friday.
You certainly will, and I'll see you there, Mark. Pleasure to speak to you.
Cheers, mate. Prediction time, part two. Hurrah!
Pass us me crystal ball. What's happening next week?
Prediction time.
Easter Monday, Reading at home. 22,000 tickets, I think, sold now. Reading are bringing about 1,000. They're even bringing the home fans into the lower tier of the South Stand, which, you know, it is a big game when that happens. And I know you're a big fan of that happening, Henry. All four sides of Bolton Wanderers fans. What can possibly go wrong?
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. I mean, it takes me back to last year, 1-1 against Cambridge, last-minute equaliser on Easter Monday, fans behind the goal, Bolton fans anyway. So hopefully we can have a better afternoon than that was in the end. But it's a tough game. Reading are fighting for their lives. They've had a bit of a boost this week. Apparently they might be being taken over. So, you know, their fans could be up for it. I can't remember too many times we've beaten Reading at home. Mm. I think we did it in the Premier League days. I think it was Sammy Lee's first win. Other than that, we haven't won many games against them at home. So we are an old one. Yeah, it's obviously a winnable game. Bolton, we know what we need to do. We need to control the game. I thought at the Medeski we controlled it for large periods and just lost all control of it in the second half and lost the game. So, hopefully we can, you know, we can pick things up. We can get a win. And as I said before, two wins in the next few days will be massive, regardless of what Derby do. If they drop points, then obviously we're in the driving seat. But I think if... you know, it just concentrate on ourselves for now.
Mm. Are you going to have a prediction?
2-0.
2-0. Comfortable. Yeah. Comfortable. Well, do I think it's going to be that comfortable? Nothing's comfortable, is it? these days. But I think if you're going to be asking for any type of game, I think probably Reading at home will suit Bolton a lot more than Stevenage away. Yeah. Whether or not they get over that kind of big crowd, big pressure atmosphere, you know, the jury is out on that one. They have done okay this season in that sort of one 4-0 home defeat against an opponent that shall not be named aside. I think they've done okay. It was absolute, you know, criminal that they didn't win at the Medeci Stadium earlier this season. How they managed not to win that game is absolutely beyond me. But Reading have changed a bit. They've had a decent season, actually, considering all the rubbish that's been against them. And they've had points taken off from left, right and centre. James Earnshaw, we will chat to in a second, they had 18 points deducted in the last 3 years, which is just mad, really, under the current ownership. So hopefully they are getting somewhere with that one. But I do think Bolton win this game. I'm going to say 3-1. So I just mentioned James, and I wanted to speak to him. It's been quite a busy week, really, for him. He's been a Romanian for starters, but he also was very, very happy to see a statement put out by Reading earlier this week, which suggests that the owner, Dai Young, has launched into the initial process of selling the club. But I've got to be honest, it's a complex business. I don't know that much about it, so I asked him to come on, and here we go. And joining me is James Earnshaw from the Reading Chronicle, a man who has had his work cut out this season, it's fair to say, James, but it looks like there is a glimmer of hope on the horizon for the Royals.
Yeah, it's certainly been a busy one. No doubt you know how that feels, you know, but muddled through to this point, and yeah, as you say, fingers crossed this could be the beginning of a new dawn.
So, statement released on Tuesday, Dai Young, obviously the owner, still the owner, but it looks like the fan pressure to remove him is getting somewhere. It looks like he may have agreed a deal elsewhere.
Yeah, so we knew a few times sort of things getting close and you know, goal posts being moved and a few other sort of issues like that nearer to sort of Christmas. But the statement yesterday is sort of a big, clear sign of intent that things are actually moving forward and they're further along now than they have been at any other point of the whole saga. So, you know, fingers crossed this is the moment we can look back on.
How has that been received by the fan base, by the club itself?
It's been well in general. There's obviously a bit of scepticism because we've, you know, there's still not a great deal of trust that he'll follow through. But it's the furthest we've got, so you've got to take it as a positive that, you know, things are different this time around and that an end goal might actually be achieved. But until everything's signed on paper, then I think fans will remain a little bit sceptical.
Well, I'll tell you out of experience, James, until you are sat there with a statement from a new owner, it's never over till it's over, as it were. I mean, the good thing from looking the outside in is that the performances on the pitch this season have been pretty strong, given everything that's gone and going all the way back to the first protest, which was when Bolton came down to your place. Great result for Reading on the day, albeit it felt a little undeserved from Bolton's point of view, but I'm not going to get into that. But ever since then, it looks like, you know, they've not done so badly considering everything that's been going on the outside.
No, on the field, I think, you know, it's been incredible. We had no real pre-season, so it's no real surprise to see that August and September and some of October was dodgy, you know, but after experimenting with 4-2-2-2, which was evidently never going to work with the squad that we had. We found 4-2-3-1, settled on it. We've got a team that more or less picks itself. I think, you know, since November, I think we're a top six, top 10 form team. Without the points being taken off, we'd be sort of pushing on for the top half. It's just incredible, I think, that the players can keep going and keep going with all the mud that's been thrown at them and all the stuff they had to deal with off the field, which the two teams from the last couple of years struggled with. The team this year seemed to be properly you know, just get on with it and do what they can do on the pitch. And yeah, they're easily good enough to stay up. And hopefully this exclusivity should draw the end of point deductions. And hopefully it's a more stress-free end to the season than we were maybe expecting.
How many points is it now in total?
In the last 3 years, it's 18. Six each for the last three seasons.
Good grief. I mean, it's like you say, I think we've seen at Bolton, when they've had their problems, occasionally you implode, and occasionally you can look at a team, you know that they're going to get relegated, you know they're only going in one direction, let's put it that way. But occasionally there can be a galvanising factor, and I don't like bringing Wigan into this, because I don't like bringing in Wigan into this podcast in general, mate, but Wigan have done very, very well when, you know, they've had points deductions, they've had quite a lot of stuff stacked up against them. Again, you know, they've done well this season, and Reading definitely, given everything, given all the it would have been easier to fold, I think, potentially.
Yeah, well, last year's team did exactly that. They didn't pick up a point, I don't think, after the deduction for the first few games until they got rid of Paul Ince, and even then they only got draws. You know, so it's, yeah, it's showing a great makeup of the team, and the players are willing to still play, and, you know, they seem to love Ruben Selles, which is done a great job, and it's galvanised the fans. But you always fear that could the next deduction be the one that breaks the camel's back? I mean, there's only so much any group of players can take, and there was always a fear that, you know, could this be the one that stops them? Could this be the one that makes them implode? But fair play to them, they just kept coming back and coming back, and, you know, looking at it now, that should in theory be the last one, at least for this season, unless things go wrong and the deal sort of falls through late on.
Was survival always the aim, you think? I mean, it looks like it's eminently achievable now. You're quite comfortable in mid-table.
Yeah, I think it was a weird season. It's felt like three or four seasons in one, to be honest. I mean, when you think we didn't have a manager and we didn't have enough players to field a team until the end of July. And then the season's obviously in August, and you kind of don't win for the first sort of six or seven games, and you go on a horrible run. There were 10 points adrift in October.
Yeah.
In the relegation zone. So sort of from October, November onwards, it was always clear that let's just stay up this year and rebuild, have a few boring years of nothing really happening, which I'm quite looking forward to eventually when it comes. And then sort of see where you are when you can build again. So yeah, I think fans will be very much sort of celebrating en masse when survival is confirmed, which, you know, for Reading doing in League One might seem a bit weird to outsiders, but we've become accustomed to survival battles, so should be another good one this year, hopefully.
Hey, football moves in cycles, and, you know, Reading have been in all four divisions, just like Bolton. Mm. Sometimes you've just got to wait for your next moment, I think. And you know, Bolton obviously have designs on the championship. Mm. They obviously will be expected to beat Reading on Monday. Is that going to be fuel to the fire, potentially, for the Royals? Do you think they're capable of going and you know, they're getting the double?
I think they're capable of it. I think, you know, it doesn't take much of looking at League One to realise that if everyone thought the Championship was balmy, then League One's just as bad in terms of teams being able to beat absolutely anyone. You know, I think Bolton should have enough. But, you know, we've done all right away from home against the teams at the top end. I mean, Derby were very fortunate to beat us with some classic League One refereeing. We came from behind twice to draw with Peterborough. Still got to go away to Barnsley. Beat Stevenage away, drew with Oxford. So sort of the teams in and around Bolton we seem to have done all right with away from home. After going 378 days without an away win, we've now picked up three this season. So things have turned there. It's an interesting, intriguing battle. And one which I don't think any team should go to any game in League One and not hope to win, because, you know, anything's possible in this league. But it's obviously the odds stacked against us, and provided we can get a result against Northampton on Monday at home, then I think Monday is kind of a free hit.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. For Bolton, obviously, if they've got Stevenage away, were they not to get a result there, I feel like a full ground, and at the moment they're looking at about 22,000, but there's going to be more than that, I'd imagine. It could be quite flat, I think, if it looks like it's going to be playoffs only for Bolton. And that could be a benefit.
Yeah, that could be a benefit for us. I think we've got quite a few going up there. I mean, it's my first trip to Tough Sheet, or, you know, to me it'll always be the Reebok, but the Tough Sheet. And I think we've got a decent amount compared to usual. I think kind of this year, the big things have been the away following has gone massively up from previous years of kind of being the butt of most jokes when it comes to sort of away followings. So I think we've got about 1,000 heading up so far. Obviously, thanks to the, you know, really good cheap tickets that Bolton have put on for their community day. So yeah, you know, I think it should be, hopefully, you know, if we both get results on Monday, I think it could be a carnival atmosphere almost for both sets of fans. I think we're sort of both on track to achieve our goals at different ends of the table, and you know, it should be a good spectacle, hopefully, in some nice sunshine.
Well, fingers crossed, mate, and I hope they put some good food on for you as well. Thank you very much for coming on the Buff.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
Yes, big thanks to James and to Neil for bailing us out. On international breaks, sometimes there's loads to go at. Sometimes you need to generate your own copy, basically, and that's been the case this week. We've had to rely on our podcasting friends to help us out this week. But it's been an enjoyable experience, nevertheless, Henry, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. And you know, it's still lots to talk about with Bolton, as there always is. But it always helps when there's two games to look forward to. And you know what? I think we haven't mentioned actually, really, but the Bolton have after 6 weeks of wanting it, Ian Everett has get the cliche book out, got them on the grass for the last 2 weeks.
and we'll see
how that affects them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm always happy when I'm on the grass. cows are happy when they're on the grass.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few teenagers I see knocking about in Leeds that seem happier on the grass as well, to be honest. But let's leave that one there. Yeah, it's been an interesting one. It's been a long international break. I have talked to Neil Hart a lot, let's be honest. There's been a lot of stories that have come from there. We've not really talked about the football. We've not really concentrated on whatever happened before the international break. I can't even remember now. All I care about is this Easter weekend, and fingers crossed, a couple of wins for Wanderers. So until next week, I've been Mark Isles.
And I've been Henry Hewitt.
This has been The Buff.